Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Wednesday edition of Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth here with you. Leading up to Smashville Live coming up at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, Chase McCabe and Hal Gill will be joined by Matthias Ekholm. Should be a lot of fun, 7 to 8 p.m. coming up Smashville Live. And then Penalty Box Radio will be live out at Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon from 8 to 9 p.m. So this is kicking off three straight hours of Predators talk, as it usually is on a Wednesday evening here on your flagship home of the Nashville Predators. Now, I want to get to last night's game because there is so much to digest. We've got Terry Crisp coming up at 6:15. We'll get his thoughts on the game. Also, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN will be joining us at 6:30 to go around the National Hockey League. But last night, so many things to talk about. And let's start with the individual that we've been talking about the most over the last couple weeks. And you know what? Kyle Turris, good for you, dude. I know I have been critical. I know a lot of people have been critical of Kyle Turris these last couple seasons, especially of late. But I think a lot of people have kind of had his back in this situation in which Peter Laviolette has scratched Kyle Turris for the last seven games. He's almost become a bigger story than the games themselves. I mean, think back to the initial night in which he was scratched, and then the Blues game where they win the game in a shootout, but the story was the fact that Arvidsson got hurt and Turris still did not re-enter the lineup. And after seven games, Kyle Turris goes out there. He wins the faceoff that leads to Kalle Järnkrok's goal in the second. He scores the tying goal on the power play in the third period to make a 2-2, eventually went to overtime at that score. Kyle Turris, good for you. It was great to see number eight have a good game like that. Whenever a player goes through a stressful situation, goes through adversity, you always want to see him bounce back. Kyle Turris did just that, and Kyle Turris last night was asked about re-entering the lineup.
Seven straight games not playing, coming back tonight. You looked like you hadn't missed a beat. How did you feel?
I felt great. You know, I felt like I played the exact same game I would have played if I didn't sit seven straight games. You know, it's just I'm playing hockey and I'm playing my game, and that's all I'm going to do.
That was Kyle Turris last night after the 3-2 overtime loss for the Nashville Predators against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Kyle Turris with one goal, one assist in the overtime loss. And Kyle Turris has been kind of consistent during this situation, dating all the way back to last March when he was initially scratched back-to-back games on a road trip out west. We've always heard him say he wants to play his game. There he is right there saying, I played my game. And I think, if I'm putting this in layman's terms, I think that means he's playing on a line that is offensive-minded, and he's not a square peg being put into a round hole on the fourth line like he has been at stretches this season and last season. And a lot's been made of Peter Laviolette and Kyle Turris, and the fact that Laviolette won't go in depth with the media over Kyle Turris. But last night, Peter Laviolette was actually pretty complimentary of Kyle Turris.
Considering that he missed seven games, sat out seven games in a row, Kyle didn't look like a player would miss that many games. How would you evaluate his performance tonight?
I thought Kyle was really strong, and the face-off circle, he was good. Really working to create. His line was good. Obviously generated, so that was great. Nice goal on the power play. So it was really good to generate offense like that. I thought he played a strong game.
That was Peter Laviolette after the game last night on Kyle Turris. So Kyle Turris with a big night, 2 points, even though it was in a losing effort. The Preds get a point, 3-2 in the loss to Tampa Bay. Nikita Kucherov scoring the goal in overtime. But there's something else from last night that I want to get to as well. So in the second period, Preds down 2-1. Ryan Johansson tries the butt check, almost copyright infringement on Philip Forsberg's reverse checks. Am I right? As Johansson is doing that, to gain position, he strikes Braden Point in the face with his elbow. You can't do that. The officials review the play on the tablet. They give Johansson a 5-minute major and a game misconduct. And I've been going back and forth ever since the play happened on whether or not that was the right punishment. And I keep coming back to the fact that it probably was. The act itself, I did not think, was overly egregious. There is also a 5-inch height difference between Ryan Johansson and Braden Point. But at the end of the day, you are in control of your body, and it was an elbow to the face. And we've seen the NHL crack down on elbows up high in the head area here lately, and they hit Johansson with a $5,000 fine today. No suspension. He was essentially just suspended half of a game, fined $5,000, and that is the end of that situation. It could have been a whole lot worse, but that is the end of that. But my issue with the officiating last night was what happened in the third period. Eric Chernock of the Tampa Bay Lightning delivered his shoulder into Daniel Carr's head, and he only got 2 minutes. What I do not understand about that situation is how the refs did not review the play for a major penalty. They reviewed it for Ryan Johansson. They did not review it for Eric Chernock. Chernock was suspended 2 games last week for an elbow against Buffalo. Last night was his second game back. Unlike Johansson with Point, Chernock was actually facing Carr. He could see Daniel Carr. Ryan Johansson did not see Braden Point. He probably had a good idea where he was. Threw the elbow a little bit, threw his body a little bit, trying to get position. He could not see Braden Point. Chernock could see Daniel Carr, excuse me. Chernock could see Carr. He made contact with Carr's head, and he only got 2 minutes. I'm sitting there. My dad is sitting there, and we're both looking at each other, asking ourselves the same question that 17,000 people in the stands and Roman Josi was asking on the ice. Between those two acts, Johansson with Point and Chernock with Carr, what is the difference? Why is Johansson's act being reviewed and Chernock's act is not? You have to remember, Chernock is a repeat offender and a recent offender. Again, it was his second game back from a 2-game suspension. I was in total agreement with Roman Josi, total agreement with the crowd last night as they were ticked off that that play was not getting reviewed when 1 period earlier, Johansson's penalty was reviewed. And you know who else was kind of frustrated by that? Ryan Johansson himself.
You catch that down here on TV? Did you see it live?
Yeah, I was watching it on TV. And, you know, I think if you look at both hockey plays, if mine's going to be reviewed, it'd be a no-brainer for that one to be reviewed. He's in a vulnerable spot, and the target was the head, so it's kind of frustrating.
That was Ryan Johansson last night after the loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning, expressing his frustration with our frustration. How did that not get reviewed for a major penalty? If you come up with a fair explanation as to why it wasn't a major penalty, okay. I don't know if there would have been one. I would have given him a major penalty if you're going to give Ryan Johansson a major penalty. Shoot, I probably would have suspended Chernock today. We always rail on the NHL Department of Player Safety for the inconsistency. We always rail on officials, not only in the NHL, but in sports in general, about inconsistency. And I just think if you want to send a message to someone like Chernock, you would have given him a lot more than just a 2-minute minor. That's just me. I wonder if you feel the same way. Tweet me at Porthgame, at 1025 The Game. How did you feel about that last night. Did you think Chernak should have gotten more than just the 2 minutes? Did you agree with Ryan Johansson getting the five-minute major and a game misconduct? Be curious to know your thoughts. The other thing that I want to get to last night, and I know the loss is frustrating, but I will spin something this way, is we've been critical about the special teams. The power play has really sagged in the last month or so. The penalty kill has struggled with consistency all season long. And last night, the reason they got a point in that game and got a point in the standings is special teams. You think back to the two plays that we're talking about and the power plays that followed them. Ryan Johansson called for a five-minute major. The Preds kill off all 5 minutes. All 5 minutes. And really, that five-minute kill, I thought, brought energy back into the building. It brought energy to the team. There was it forced the Predators, down one goal at the time, to play with desperation that they weren't playing with to start the game. Thought they came out slow. Thought they looked maybe, I don't know if lethargic is the right word, but they were just kind of seemed like they were going through the motions. And that five-minute kill seemed to really spark something in them. And then you think to the power play in the third period, you didn't get a five-minute major. Who knows what would have happened with that game if you did. But Kyle Turris converts on the power play. First game back in 7 games. You tie the game at 2. If you reverse the fortunes of those two special teams, you lose 3-1. But your special teams came through in the clutch both times. Tied 2-2, going to overtime. Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos team up on a nice play to beat the Preds 3-2 in overtime. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by the unofficial mayor of Smashville. That's right, Terry Crisp. He's coming up next here on Preds Insiders. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth here with you in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Leading up to Smashville Live, Matthias Ekholm is the special guest for Chase McCabe and Hal Gill coming up at the top of the hour down at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. And if you can make it there, you can register to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds host the New Jersey Devils this Saturday night. That is not one you're going to want to miss as PK Subban makes his return. Last night, the Preds lose 3-2 in overtime to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And joining us now is the one and only Terry Crisp, Predators analyst of Fox Sports Tennessee. Terry, how are we doing this evening?
We are doing awesome. Thank you very much. It is the season to be jolly. And we will not let the odd little overtime loss or whatever spoil our spirit for us. But having said that, I think I'd prefer a couple W's to make my spirit a little better.
Well, speaking of holly and jolly, I don't think those two teams were very holly and jolly together last night. You don't typically see games between East and West teams on December 3rd be that chippy, do you?
You know what? I was surprised. I expected just a flat-out offensive game, speed coming at you. And last night, for some reason, but then you take a look at their lineup and you forget that they got 3 or 4 pretty good heavyweights out there. And then our guys were answering the bell last night. So, yeah, there was a lot of bodies flying. It was a good, solid hockey game. Like, I mean, both teams coming, both. But again, I point to the fact that I wish that the chances we get. Like, you look at the scoreboard, and the shots are like 16-3 or 4, which we know stats. Like Pete Weber says, there's stats and then there's lies. So take your pick as to which one you want to use. But we had so many point-blank chances to bury it and didn't do it. And that seems to be our theme lately. Working hard, getting chances, don't bury them. And that's coming back to bite us.
Well, and one theme for a lot of this regular season so far has been slower starts out of the gates in the first period. And my dad and I looked at each other last night at the game during the first period and just thought that team was kind of just out of energy. It was just kind of going through the motions. It was a slow start. As a coach, how do you correct that?
You know what? You preach it and preach it and preach it. You preach it in your morning meeting. You preach it in your morning skate out and whatnot. You come in for your meeting in the evening just for the game, and you preach it. Guys, we've got to come out of the box. We've got to, every line going over the boards has got to be ready. Every line, the first shift through, the first time through the lineup, every line's got to contribute. You've got to make it. You've got to bring your best. Get yourself into it. Get your teammates, your line mates into it. Get some pizzazz going. That's the only, there's no magic wand. There's no, that we're going to, it's entirely up to the players. I mean, my dad used to have a saying, and you want to, but he used to say, you know, you can lead a horse, you can lead a horse to water, but a pencil's got to be led. Now you can work on that one, right? When I leave you alone, you'll figure it out.
No, I figured that one out.
What this means is these guys, no matter what you're talking and what you're speaking about, you got to carry it onto the ice. It's got to be carried out onto the ice.
So last night I felt more energy came into that building, maybe for some of the wrong reasons, with Ryan Johansson, the elbow to Brayden Point. They review it. They give Ryan Johansson the game misconduct and a five-minute major. And I want to get to that in a minute. But the five-minute penalty kill where the Preds did not give up a power play goal to that very talented Lightning offense, that's kind of where I thought more energy seeped into the building and that team started playing with a lot more desperation.
You know what? You're dead on right. Last night, like, we had the night off, meaning the broadcast group, Willie and Mason, Kara and Lindsay, and all of us that were beating the skills ahead of our, but we were all sitting up there together. When they killed that off, we were cheering like mad, and that's when the crowd really lifted. And really, when you're up in the, with the people in the stands, that's where you get the feeling, and we could just feel the buzz in our building. You could just feel the energy come through it. They were so happy to see that done, and because they were so mad at the penalty to begin with, and so aggravated. And then when the guys killed it off, that should have been, that was part of the turning point. But, you know, I watch, right at the end of that penalty kill, if you remember, Austin Watson made a great block. I mean, they were buzzing. And they were blasting it. And with about, I don't know, some seconds left, he made a huge block right slot center that was coming down. And then they changed lines, and I was watching. And only one guy coming off the bench tapped Austin Watson on the pads. Only one. And I was looking to see who was, you know, I've been the first guy coming on the ice to hug him for what he'd just done. So I think that's one of the areas where we have to get, you know, when you're coming and going, you talk to each other, you tap each other, they do a good job. And, you know, we're men. Yeah, you're not supposed to show emotion. Well, I think if you don't show emotion, you're in the wrong business.
So how do you correct that? Is that something that the captain, Roman Josi, has to kind of instill with the team? Is that Peter Laviolette? Is that just the collection of players?
You know what? That's just something players do. Like, I played all my life, and let's be honest, I was a yapper. I was a talker. And
you still are.
On the ice and I still am. When I was on the bench, I'd wear them down. But I thought if you're going to keep yourself in the game, that's one way to do it. Like, you know, you're a third, fourth liner like I was. You know, maybe not get a lot of ice time. But there's nothing to stop you from cheering the guys on, tapping them when they come off. Nice hit. Nice block. Way to make set that up. Keep it going. Whatever it takes. And it just shows your line mates, yeah, you're into it. Like I said, I would have given Austin Watson a hug coming on the ice after what he did. And that's what I think that's what part of the game is enthusiasm. And don't be afraid to show it.
Terry Crisp here with us on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Crispy, the Ryan Johansson elbow to the head of Brayden Point last night in the second period. Ryan Johansson gets a game misconduct. He gets a five-minute major, and he was slapped today with a $5,000 fine. Do you think that was suffice enough discipline overall that it was essentially just a half-game suspension and the fine, or was that maybe too far for the act?
You know, I'm sort of torn because I didn't see it initially. I was talking with Mace, and then when they replayed it, I was under the opinion that Joey didn't see him coming and threw the arm back. But then afterward, I mean, the referee's got to call it on that one. I was a little irate, like the fans were, upset because it was our team and one of our players. But we keep harping about it. We got to clean it up. We got to clean the cheap shots up, blah, blah. And I'm not saying that was a cheap shot. I'm just saying the referees saw it one way and most of us saw it the other way. But then to come right back with the elbow, and I think it was on Carr, I believe, whoever elbowed him.
Yes.
But you know what? And I was really mad at that. But I would have to go along the lines as, did you watch the replay of that one today?
Yes.
Did you happen to see? How did you call that in your mind?
I thought if Ryan Johansson received a 5-minute major and a game misconduct for his act, that Eric Chernock deserved the same exact penalty or even more, because I thought personally there was more intent on Chernock's behalf. He knew what he was doing. He put the shoulder right into Carr's head, where Johansson, like, point is behind him. Yes, he's fending him off. Point's behind him, and he has a half-foot size difference, size edge on Braden Point, where Chernock just blows right into Carr, and the head was the first point of contact. So that was my thought.
He never put the brakes on. He didn't hesitate one iota. He didn't change any parts of his body that he knew was going to make contact in that hit. So that's the opinion. I was always almost similar in purpose to Bertuzzo when he knew exactly what he was doing when he cross-checked Harvey and doing that one. So, again, it's one of those nights where you knew it was going to be rough and tough, and it was, and the guys played tough. We just come up a goal short.
And I said this last segment is, you know, if you give Johansson the game misconduct and the 5-minute major, fine. But you went and reviewed that one. There was something that you saw live that forced the officials to go review it on their little tablet there at the penalty boxes. How do you not review the Chernock hit?
How, I don't know.
And I think that's what Roman Josi was so irate about when it was only a 2-minute minor penalty and they weren't going to review it, was it was very similar in terms of the egregiousness of the act as Johansson did with Point.
And our captain, rightfully so, I loved it when he did. And he wasn't giving up. The referee was trying to wave him off, trying to get him. Roman was just like bubblegum sticking to him. You know, saying, hey, give me an answer. Give me an honest answer as to what I'm asking you. I'm asking you why he's not whatever, like you did to Johansson. And the referee obviously just trying to get away from him. And Josi just stuck right with him, which I was proud of Josi for doing that. So, you know, give us an honest answer. But I didn't see anybody giving him one.
Have you ever seen Roman Josi that irate as he was last night? Multiple times, not just that instance.
Yeah, and he's frustrated too. He knows as captain that he wants to lead this team, and he does. In so many ways he does. And obviously he's like a lot of the other ones. They're frustrated. Same as the coaches. You get frustrated when you're working so hard. You know your fans want wins. You know they come to cheer you on and stay with you and back you up. But the idea is you're trying to give them wins. So I think that's the frustrating part for players, is what they want to bring to their fans, and they just come up a little short periodically.
Terry Crisp here with us, Preds Insiders. How good was it for you to see Kyle Turris get on the board last night with 2 points and a goal?
You know, I'm happy for Kyle because I discussed this before with people, and I've been on both sides of the fence with what Kyle's going through. I've been a player that thought I should play and thought I was better than what I was and whatnot, that I should have been and wasn't, but I was. And then I've been a coach who's had to do that to a player also. And I tell you what, on both sides of the fence, it's not fun. It's not fun for the coach to do that. It's certainly not fun for the player. So, you know what? I've seen it before. To me, it's just hockey. I don't get really caught up or upset one way or the other because, like I said, after all my years in hockey, I've seen it. So it's nothing new. And it won't be the last time it's done to other players also. So right now, it's up to Kyle Turris to prove to the coaching staff and whatnot that he deserves the ice time. Well, let's give Kyle Turris full credit. Last night he jumped on the ice, played a whale of a game, got a goal and assist, won a big face-off for us in the overtime, and then went onto the bench, and he scored right after that. But he certainly did his job and showed them that, yeah, I want to be back in the lineup.
Was that a different version of Kyle Turris that you saw last night?
Yeah, I don't know if it's different because Kyle Turris is a very skilled hockey player and a very smart hockey player. And his game, and I'm not sure, but I think his game is reading the game, setting up, making plays. And I think last night he did just that. But last night also, he got involved. He was going to the net and going into the corners and making things happen. So I think that Kyle probably said to himself, you know what, whatever it takes, if it takes that I got to go to the front or go to the corner, that's what I'm going to do. And last night he did that.
Preds Insiders, Terry Crisp here with us. Pekka-Rinne, the last couple starts, have you seen an improvement in his play or maybe a difference in his play than maybe in the month of November where he was pulled 3 out of 4 starts?
No, no. Pecorino is still the best goaltender, and he's still awesome. And even when he was having trouble, I point to the fact that, and I'm putting my coaching hat, I don't blame Pekka. I blame the team in front of him. Too many loose pucks, too many no heads in the swivel, too many point blank shots, too many odd man rushes, certainly breakaways. No, so the goalie can only stop so many, and he can only do so much in a hockey game. And if they just keep coming at you, you plug one hole in the dike and another hole opens up and the water's gushing at you. What are you going to do? So Pecorino, he plays every game, he plays his heart out for you. And a lot of nights, it'll look like, what the heck's going on? And a lot of nights, he'll be the first guy to tell you, you know, yeah, I let a couple soft goals in. Those shouldn't get by me. But, I mean, for the chances they're having in most games on him, I sure can't lay it at Pekka's feet.
So let me phrase it this way then. Have you seen a difference in the play in front of him in his last two starts against Carolina and Tampa Bay, two high-powered offenses?
Yes, I have. I've seen the guys now starting to like do it with young Saros when he's in. We pay a little more attention to the front of the net, a little more attention to clearing the loose pucks. That Pekka makes a big save through traffic. The puck is bouncing around. I've seen the guys pay a price now. Our defense corps paying a price now to get that puck loose, to bang it in the corner, bang it down, take an icing, whatever. Yes, in that incident, I've seen a difference in that too to help Pekka.
So Saturday night is P.K. Subban's return with the New Jersey Devils when they visit Smashville. What, in your mind, is the lasting legacy of P.K. Subban's 3 seasons with the Preds?
Probably his enthusiasm. You can't overlook what he does in the community. I mean, the fans loved him. Children, he was always there doing stuff, being seen. I just think that Subban in the game is like, I know if you're an old curmudgeon or old school, it's not a lot of the stuff you want to see or the action. But he is what he is. And he brings, you know, enthusiasm to the game. He brings different moves to the game. I had no qualms. I enjoyed P.K. Subban while he was here, and we wish him the best of luck wherever he goes. And I also really appreciate the fact of what he does for charity.
And you use the word enthusiasm. There is no person on this planet with more enthusiasm than Terry Crisp. Crispy, thank you so much for joining me here on Preds Insiders.
Brother, my pleasure anytime. And like we always say to our fans when they're going down the concourse, I love when they yell back at me and I'm screaming from our desk, Lindsay, bring the passion. Well, to all of our fans, you bring the passion, it'll rub off on the players.
Love it. Thank you so much, Crispy.
Thanks, brother. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Good stuff there, as always, from Terry Crisp. We will have a little bit more on P.K. Subban later on in the show, including coming up next. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski does a great job covering the NHL for the Four Letter Network. Greg is going to join us next. He's going to talk P.K. Subban. He's going to talk Taylor Hall and the NHL coaching mess going on around the National Hockey League. That's all coming up next here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday evening, leading up to Smashville Live at 7 o'clock at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Chase McCabe and Hal Gill will be joined by Preds defenseman Matthias Ekholm. Matthew Olivier was a part of the show as well, but he was reassigned to Milwaukee earlier today. Preds back at it Saturday night against the New Jersey Devils. Speaking of the Devils, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN has been a noted Devils fan throughout his life, and he joins us now to talk P.K. Subban, Taylor Hall, and a lot of other NHL things going on right now. Greg, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So Saturday night is P.K. Subban's return to Nashville, the first game back since the trade back on draft weekend back in June. And I spoke with you earlier this season here on this very show, and P.K. Subban's first impression that you had with the Devils was a little up and down. Would you say it's still that way through 27 games?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you know, nothing that P.K. has done has really blown anybody away. His offensive numbers obviously are not exactly stellar. Hasn't really made a huge impact on special teams. But again, when you're talking about the Devils, you're talking about one of the abject disasters in the National Hockey League this season. There's only so much he can do. And if you look inside the numbers as far as some of the analytics with regard to how he's playing relative to that of the play of his teammates, he's actually outplaying a lot of his teammates, which isn't saying much, again, when the Devils are as bad as they are. So from that perspective, maybe you give PK a little credit. But, you know, in a season that had such high expectations because of his addition, Wayne Simmons, Nikita Gusev, drafting Jack Hughes first overall, a healthy Taylor Hall, it's all fallen apart to the point where the coach has now been fired. And I think PK has just been, you know, caught in that swirl around the bottom of the toilet right now for the Devils.
So you bring up the swirl of the New Jersey Devils. There's also now trade rumors surrounding Taylor Hall, the player in his last year of his deal. And there are a lot of rumors that he's going to land inside the Central Division, either maybe Dallas, St. Louis, Colorado. Do you think it's likely that he lands within the Preds division?
I would say based on the percentages, yeah. I mean, because you're going to have a number of teams in the Central that all have the ability to potentially acquire him and that clearly know that it's an absolute arms race in the Western Conference. Here's what we know. We know that the New Jersey Devils have been scouting the Colorado Avalanche at all levels of their hockey operations for most of this season, and that the Colorado Avalanche obviously has the cap space currently and the prospect pool to probably pull off this deal if they wanted to. Whether that means Taylor Hall stays there long-term, who's to say? But when you look at that team and see how dominant the MacKinnon line can be when it's healthy, adding Taylor Hall to a second line with Nazem Kadri seems like a pretty natural fit for a team that a lot of people think can be a cup contender. The Blues and the Stars, I think, are two teams that get looped into this Taylor Hall stuff just because they've been so incredibly aggressive. I mean, Doug Armstrong clearly would be someone that would be angling to add a Taylor Hall. The Dallas Stars have been on almost every player that's come up and been available. I mean, whether it was Erik Karlsson or John Tavares, so Taylor Hall would clearly be in their sights. But there's one team back east that I'm intrigued by, and that's the Boston Bruins. The Bruins, I'm not quite sure financially how they make this work as a rental because they might have to move some pieces around. But that's a team that, even going back to their acquisition of Rick Nash a few years ago, has been looking for that second-line left wing forever. And Taylor Hall, I know, has affinity for the Bruins. I know the Bruins probably have some affinity for Taylor Hall. And that would seem like a pretty natural fit as a rental if they can make the numbers work as well. I mean, obviously a team that has some serious designs on winning a cup that they didn't win last season.
The only thing that wouldn't work for Taylor Hall in Boston is the number four.
Yeah, he might have to augment that a little bit. you know, I don't think that they're bringing it down from the rafters necessarily. But the real intrigue, I think, for Taylor Hall is there might be two very distinct and separate markets as far as teams looking to rent him for a championship run and teams that be willing to spend upwards of $10 million a season for a guy that's going to be, you know, getting up in the years. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't necessarily think the team that acquires Taylor Hall will be the team that ultimately signs him. And if you're asking me, I'd put a pretty decent percentage on the idea that Taylor Hall could end up back with the Edmonton Oilers next summer. I don't think they'll give up assets to get him now, but it wouldn't shock me to see them try to work something financially to get him next summer if he wants to go back.
So to finish the Taylor Hall angle and the Central Division, if you're a Preds fan out there, what is kind of the worst-case scenario in terms of the three teams that are heavily rumored, Colorado, St. Louis, and Dallas? Which one of those three would kind of be that worst-case scenario of if Hall ended up on that team, oh boy, that team is locked and loaded for a long run?
I think it's Colorado. I mean, you know, St. Louis, you know what they're capable of. You know what kind of hockey they play. They're a pretty known quantity. In Colorado's case, I think the only question about them coming into the season was their overall depth. Now, they did a real good job addressing it in the summer, acquiring Jonas Donskoy from the Sharks, acquiring Andre Burakovsky from the Capitals, you know, the Kadri deal. Like, they clearly have done some big steps towards making the depth on that team better than it was. But you still don't have that guy necessarily outside of the top line that you really have to worry about. And Taylor Hall, putting him on any line on your team, now all of a sudden you have to worry about that line. So the Colorado Avalanche, to me, would be the one team that would get exponentially better with the introduction of Taylor Hall to that squad. Although, you know, for a lot of us that remember the draft year when they were both available, it would be a kick to see Tyler Seguin and Taylor Hall on the same line in Dallas at some point, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no kidding. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN with us here on Preds Insiders. Greg covers the NHL for ESPN. Now, Greg, these last 7 to 10 days in the NHL coaching front has certainly been interesting. In your opinion, what kind of barrier did Akeem Alou kind of break regarding his experiences and sharing those experiences about Bill Peters that ultimately led to Peters firing in Calgary and now other players coming out to share stories on former coaches of theirs?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a seminal moment for the league because his candor and honesty about Bill Peters led to obviously a whole bunch of different accusations being levied at different coaches. So, you know, you had Michael Jordan, the former player for the Carolina Hurricanes, come out and talk about the physical abuse by Bill Peters. That contributed to his resignation in Calgary. That then led to the accusations of abuse, many of them that had been on the record for over a year now, against Mark Crawford with the Chicago Blackhawks back when he was head coach of the LA Kings. Then he gets put on administrative leave. We're at a moment where you're starting to really wonder whether this is going to be a giant reckoning about the behavior of coaches, whether this is going to be an opportunistic thing where only certain guys get targeted, and whether it all adds up to a moment where we break this cycle. And, you know, what it comes back to for me is, you know, punching and kicking players should be a given that it's bad and that should not be tolerated. But the culture was at a point within the last decade where that was just seen to be part of the quote-unquote tough love of players. And those players that didn't see it as quote-unquote tough love were intimidated to complain about it, bring it to the NHLPA, do something public about it, because coaches hold all the power in that dynamic. They could demote them. They can reduce their playing time. They could bag skate them in practice as more physical abuse. There is a large, huge, reckoning-level conversation that needs to be had about that power dynamic, about ways to remedy these things for players without repercussions. And the NHL started it with Akeem Alou at their offices this week. They're going to continue it at the Board of Governors meeting next week in Pebble Beach, where they're expected to formalize some standards for reporting these things and maybe even punishing these things. But it is a real conundrum as to whether the culture itself is going to change, because you're going to have people that just see this as part of it and not a problem and just what coaches do. And we need more people like Patrick O'Sullivan and Brent Sopel and Johan Franzen and others that have come forward to put voice to what's actually going on in the community. And it remains to be seen if that's going to happen.
For this Nashville Predators team this season, October was a big high, November was a big low. What's kind of been your view through the first quarter of this NHL season on how the Preds have performed?
Yeah, they're just in that group of sort of middling teams in the West that, you know, are punching way below their weight right now. I would put San Jose in that group. I'd put Vegas for most of the season in that group. And the real conundrum from the outside looking in is the goaltending, where through the first month of the season, I think Pekka might have been, you know, front runner for the Vezina. My God, he was playing extraordinarily well. And then you look at the numbers overall for this team and you see a save percentage for the Predators that's bottom five in the league as a team. And that is just uncharacteristic from what you expect from Nashville. So You'd expect it to boomerang back the other way at some point. I've read all the stories about whether it's time for the passing of the torch amongst the goaltenders. I don't know if that's the case or not. But it certainly isn't going to be a situation where I expect to see the Predators in the same position as far as team save percentage by the end of the season. Hopefully that's an anomaly, and hopefully with some of this drama with Kyle Turris getting sorted out as well, they can all kind of move forward on that one as well.
Greg Wyshynski does a great job covering the NHL for ESPN. Greg, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, bud. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, as always, to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN for joining us here on Preds Insiders. Always enjoy catching up with Greg. Coming up next, last night at the game, I had someone ask if I was concerned about this Preds team this season. On the other side, I will share my response. Plus, that look back on PK in Nashville. That's all coming up next. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the show, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday evening. Coming up here at the top of the hour, it is Smashville Live. Matthias Ekholm will be joining Chase McCabe and Hal Gill at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. And if you are going, you can register to win two tickets to see the Preds take on the New Jersey Devils coming up this Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena. Should be a lot of fun. Speaking of the Devils, we will get to PK Subban here in a little bit. But I teased before the break that last night somebody came up to me and said, are you concerned about this Preds team? It's December. Are you concerned about this team? Initially, I thought, you know what? It's early in the season. It's December, let alone it's December 3rd. There's a lot of time. Well, you can only say that for so much longer, really. I mean, the St. Louis Blues, they were dead last in the Western Conference. They come roaring back in the second half of last year and win the Stanley Cup. That is the extreme anomaly to what usually happens in the National Hockey League. And at this point right now, at 29 points, yes, they have games in hand, but at 29 points, the Nashville Predators are closer to the bottom of the West as they are a playoff spot. That's concerning to me. 46, 36, and 11. What is that record? That is their record in the last 93 games after they started last season like a house on fire, 13 and 3. 46, 36, and 11. If you add the regulation losses with the overtime losses, you're essentially looking at a 500 team, 46 and 47. That is a large sample size of this team going through roller coaster stretches of last regular season, now this regular season. And yeah, that is concerning to me. We can all bring up the fact that in the 2016-17 regular season, they had roller coaster stretches as well. There was a point around the new year in which we didn't know whether this team was going to make the playoffs. We could be in a similar position here in Nashville about this Preds team regarding their playoff chances. And yes, they do have games in hand, but I'm watching that first period last night thinking, where's the Preds team that attacks instead of reacts, right? Like, where's the Preds team that is tough to play against? Where's the Preds team that is pushing the pace, playing with a ton of energy? I know it's difficult to play like that all 82 games, but there have been a lot of games this season in which they've come out with a slow start. That's concerning to me. Now, the overall concern that I have, honestly, doesn't have much to do with last night's game. Yeah, slow start. Yeah, I had some of those thoughts going through my mind in the first period, but I will give them credit. They were without Arvidsson. They were without Mikael Granlund, who missed the game with a lower body injury. They lost Ryan Johansson halfway through the game. They got a point. The Lightning's two best players made a play when it counts in overtime. You have to tip your hat to Kucherov and Stamkos. My overall concern stems from the fact that they have only won four of their last 15 games. And this is an important part of the season coming up. They have a few days off. Hopefully, with the New Jersey Devils and PK Subban coming into town, this team's going to be energized Saturday night. Saturday nights, for whatever reason, haven't been extremely successful for this Preds team. I have no idea why, especially at home. We'll see Saturday night against the Devils, but the schedule's about to get really compact between Saturday and Christmas, and then you're basically at the halfway point of the season. If they're still going through a lot of the same inconsistencies where you don't really know what to expect on any given night, yeah, they have responded with a 3-1-2 record in their last six games following the six-game losing streak. But man, this team right now just seems to be treading water, and they need to kick it into gear sooner rather than later. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify by searching Preds Insiders. Every new episode that we do here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, it will automatically upload to your phone, to your device, and you will be able to listen to anything that you missed with Preds Insiders right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So if you haven't done that yet, please do. Now, Saturday night, I've been mentioning it all show long. Saturday night is PK Subban's return to Nashville for the first time since the draft weekend trade that sent PK from Nashville to New Jersey. That trade occurred almost 3 years to the day of the other trade that PK was involved with the Nashville Predators, and it was one of the biggest moments in franchise history. If you think about it, there are five banners in the Raptors at Bridgestone Arena. There weren't any banners at Bridgestone Arena before PK's arrival, and I think Subban can take some credit for those banners, especially the 2017 Cup run in which they made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Final and fell in six games to the Penguins. PK Subban was a finalist for the Norris Trophy. He made it on the cover of NHL 19. I'll tell you, the panache that he brought on a daily basis, both on the ice and off the ice, that brought a lot of positive attention to this organization. And the 3 years he was here, he is a big reason why the fan base grew the way it did while he was here. He had great community work. You heard that with Terry Crisp earlier in the show. The Blue Line Buddies initiative that he started and was his idea, his former teammates have now carried it on into the season. I think PK Subban has a lasting legacy with this organization, and it will be great to see him back in Bridgestone Arena Saturday night, and I cannot wait for that tribute video, most likely, I would assume, in the first period. That's all for Preds Insiders this evening. Keep it locked right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game as Smashville Live is next. Penalty Box Radio from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon at 8. Your home of Smashville is ESPN 102.5 The Game.